Hello to this episode on the Subscribe blog. Today's topic is tests, and it's another one of the series of kind of behind the scenes on Service Bus and how we're building things. And so when I was in Redmond, I sat down with Cesar, who's our test manager. And Cesar and I talked about how we test, how we do quality assurance on Service Bus. The reason why that's topical this week, at least for me, is because I'm currently on the hook 24/7. For all the 8 data centers that we're in with Service Bus, and inside those 8 data centers are a number of scale units. I had a talk here on the Subscribe blog, which actually talks about environments and scale units, so you may want to review this if you want to know what a scale unit is. And so for all these systems in those 8 data centers, I'm currently the one guy on call for 24 hours a day for a week, and the only reason why that's survivable and why I even get to sleep and actually get to sleep well is because we have a dedicated test team led by Cesar that's making sure that whatever we put into the data center is released only when the quality is right, and we're doing that on the short cadences that I talked about with Abhishek and MK, if you've been following this little series, kind of sub-series here on the blog. And so we talk about some techniques, some things we do on the test side, and why having a dedicated test organization as part of your overall development team is a valuable thing. So here's what we talked about week before last. Hello, welcome back on the Subscribe blog with my series of talking to folks from the Service Bus team. I have here Cesar, who is our test manager. And test is something that in the outside world, people see as the test-driven development is a big thing.
Uh-huh.
That's not what you guys are doing.
On Service Bus? So, thanks everybody. It depends how you count it. If you count test-driven development as strictly a developer first, like writing its code so that its design counts better and usability counts better, we don't exactly do that. I mean, we do first actually like design the APIs, code the APIs, and then we have actually people where his main line of job is actually ensuring that the APIs basically do what they are supposed to do, have good guidelines. But also I think that most of the stuff that actually that this team does is actually ensuring actually that the code actually follows a lot of principles and dimensions that are hard to actually like see from TDD, right? For example, things like how reliable the code is when running for long periods of time, things like how resilient the code is when actually events like machines crashing or network failing or low memory conditions are happening. So it's slightly different and a different pivot than TDD.
So the TDD is something that folks will be familiar with, because the dedicated test organization as we have it, mm-hmm. is something that's not so common in, I think, in the developer world out there. But it's not, so having a test team doesn't mean that now the devs, I talked to MK earlier,
mm-hmm.
are off the hook and don't need to write their unit tests anymore.
Right.
Because the way the code gets accepted into the depot at
mm-hmm.
all
mm-hmm.
is that they need to, once they write functionality, they also need to contribute the basic functional tests for them.
Yeah, unit tests basically.
Yeah, so that's the devs are on the hook for this. So
yeah.
your team is taking that as a prerequisite.
Correct.
For the code.
Yep.
And then further goes into effectively torturing the system from that point on.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, basically, if I describe kind of like all the different type of test cases and different categories that we have, we start basically with unit tests, which actually the developer that is actually writing the code actually has to contribute to. We have actually a relatively high code coverage bar in terms of number of blocks that the developer that wrote the code has to hit himself or herself. And that number actually varies from 70 to 80% block code coverage. So that actually guarantees that the code is kind of like not just building, but it's also like functional, and for the most part, that's what it's supposed to actually do. And then from that point forward, basically, the test team basically takes it and has different categories of test cases. So for example, we have something that we call integration testing. And you could think of it that it's probably like the next level of unit testing, because we are still actually testing the functionality of the product. However, we don't actually do, we don't do fakes there, right? So the way we actually test functionality is we deploy the product to a production-like environment. And when I say a production-like environment, it's really like production-like environment. I mean, the only difference is that in production stamps, we might have 50 or hundreds of nodes. In a test environment just for integration, we might have only like 8 to 10 nodes. But other than that, topology is the same, everything is the same, settings are all the same. So we do full deployments. And then we basically build test cases that exercise all the functionality in an end-to-end way on a full deploy environment. And we end up finding issues also that pop there, but don't pop on unit testing, because integration components actually don't play well with each other. And that's kind of like our first kind of like that level of testing. Then we actually do what we call endurance testing. And this is actually workloads, for example. To give you an idea, in Service Bus, we probably today have around 60 to 80 workloads that exercise the system from very basically very different angles. And these test cases actually have to run for 3 to 7 days before, or these workloads have to run for 3 to 7 days, meeting a reliability of 99.99. Building those workloads actually in the face of actually the product being flaky, it's a full job, right? It's a full day job, because it's one thing to use a product that has already been verified and signed off and it just works, as opposed to like writing and building a product, building a workload on something that it's still not ready, right?
Yes.
So writing those test cases that actually never stop, and actually analyzing them, figuring out how to actually get so many logs and understand them and seeing the trends on them, it's a full-time job.
So we have the suite of tests that we have built since we shipped, or mm-hmm. even before we shipped. Mm-hmm. That's growing, and as we do the testing, we keep running these same the expanded test suite against
Correct.
The system.
Correct. Right. Yeah, I mean, in 2009, I think that suite was probably around 20 test cases. And yeah, every year we add another 20, 30 test cases as, mm-hmm. as more and more features come in. And that's actually just endurance testing. I mean, other type of testing that we do, we typically call it failover. And failover basically, for us, is basically the testing that you have to do to basically go and ensure that the system actually is self-healing and basically recovers, right? So we use very similar workload than for endurance, where we have actually a workload that is continuously running, it never stops. And then while that is going, we basically go and then inject failures into the system. So we go and basically kill processes, we go and actually like disconnect networks, we go and actually cause disk failures, we go and cause basically failures on other services, or simulate failures on other services that we might be depending. Like for example, we depend on SQL Azure, so we might go and actually simulate a SQL database being down, and how do we recover from that. And again, I think basically there our goal is to ensure that the system does recover, and to actually measure very precisely how long does it take to actually recover in the system, right? Because we don't want our either relay endpoints or queues or topics or all the different build constructs that we provide to actually be down for more than a couple of seconds.
And then there's stress. Performance.
Stress is typically what we call endurance.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that is actually very interesting, and it also takes a lot of detail-oriented thinking, for example, with the failover workload, is that it basically gets complex, because it's not a simple matter of like pass or fail. For example,
mm-hmm.
for us in the messaging space, for example, for things like queues and topics, message loss is actually like super critical.
Yes, right? That's right.
So one of the things that workload does is basically that it is basically built in such a way that it's very, very particular about detecting if a message has been sent and the service has actually acted that message got in, then that message has to go out, or we will basically like fail that test, and then we'll have to investigate and determine like, hey, did we really lose the message? Mm-hmm. Has the workload had a problem? And we have found like a lot of issues that I'm pretty sure our customers will be very unhappy if we suddenly start losing messages. We have performance, and we measure different things on performance. I mean, we measure things like latency, we measure things like how fast a given queue or topic can receive messages. And we also basically measure the scalability of our system, right? So regardless of how fast or can a queue or topic go, we also want to make sure that as we add actually more resources to the system should basically scale linearly mm-hmm. to a certain, point. So we do that for performance, and again, that's another kind of like full-time job for building the workload, ensuring that the workload is running all the time, analyzing regressions, getting down to actually get basically CPU profiles, memory profiles, and different scenarios that will actually both micro benchmarks and macro benchmarks that will exercise the system in different ways.
What's interesting, observing you, especially also in servicing, when something happens in some data center and the alarm bells ring mm-hmm. and it turns out that you are available or you're checking the cell, or someone else from the test team, very often when the when we look at the graphs that come out of the performance counters, which is kind of one of our primary ways of looking at things, mm-hmm. because we're testing systematically and we're testing kind of these endurance tests, we kind of know what the pulse and how the healthy lines of the system look like.
Yeah.
And we can tell whether the system is okay or not okay kind of with one glance at the heartbeat of the
Correct.
System.
Mm-hmm.
And then also kind of because we see how the system look, because we know how the system looks when it fails,
mm-hmm.
because of those kind of fault testing, we can often tell just by looking at the graph
Mm-hmm. What's going on? Yeah.
And that's so learning. You're building something that's fairly complicated, a complicated distributed system as we do it, and then you test it from various angles to
Right.
learn how it behaves,
Right.
and how it behaves when it's unhealthy.
Correct. I mean, I think basically the way I think about it basically is that all systems that you build effectively are going to have a limit.
Yes.
Most systems that basically are supposed to be limitless, most of the time is really that the limit is so high that you will never hit it. And so,
yes,
you could practically say that it's limitless. And so a lot of the things that that the test team actually does and the value that it provides to the team is basically finding those limits that the system has, right? So, yeah, we have found cases where we actually go, we measure, we find the limits that the system have. We then go and evaluate like, hey, are those limits okay? Should we put more resources or not? And sometimes, yeah, we have made mistakes and thought that, yep, that those resources are enough and the limit we have should be fine. And then our customer surprises using it in ways we didn't expect us, and turns out the limit is not appropriate. And so when we know about those limits and they happen in production, it's relatively easy for us to actually then figure out kind of like what are the next steps. There are also cases where, even though we have like a lot of smart people both on dev, tests, and all the engineering team, there are limits that we don't actually think of, right? And in those cases is actually where we struggle the most, right? Because it's like we really get surprised by like, hey, this doesn't seem right. It's not working fine, but we are hitting some limit that we really don't know what it is, right? In those cases, then we have to go understand it, debug it really hard, and find out effectively what the limit is, and then use that as a feedback loop for the test that we have in-house, and start considering that limit more systematically like we do all other limits.
Yeah, I talked, for instance, to the Halo team, they were telling me, or we were talking about it, and we're talking about the test case scenario where they were loading our system with hundreds of thousands of scheduled messages,
mm-hmm.
Something that we certainly didn't anticipate, and that kind of caused us trouble when they first tried that.
Correct.
And but learning about those patterns
mm-hmm.
then also makes us add those kinds of scenarios into the suite.
Okay.
and then we'll effectively adapt our tests to the real life scenarios that the other external customers come up with.
Yeah, I mean, we typically take that feedback and do multiple things. Like, for example, sometimes we go and just basically invest into our test bed to actually build those scenarios. Sometimes we actually found that the scenarios might actually not be that valid, or that the customer actually might be misusing the system. And in those cases, we also actually put basically protections and quotas and throttles into the system so that that scenario is really not not possible to do again, and it doesn't cause any harm to other customers in a multi-tenant service.
Yeah, so I think for a live site and for a live web service, having a dedicated test team is something that is inevitable. And I think also that the separation between the team that does the work in terms of implementation and the team that does the work in terms of verification and making sure that it's ready for production, having a clear separation between the two and not getting those two confused is something that is at least has proven very valuable for us at Service Bus.
Yeah, I mean, that's how we have actually worked on Service Bus, but I don't know. I mean, I'm not actually like married to either approach. Mm-hmm. I think that I mean, I have seen teams that actually are like fairly successful having mainly actually a dev team and a very very small team. Sometimes what those teams do actually is that a lot of the actual quality and a lot of the measuring itself is done by the dev team, and then test team actually just does a few more like integration and maybe some of the really really hard things to measure, mm-hmm. As opposed to measuring mainly everything. So it's possible to actually do it, but the typical challenge that I have seen in teams like that is basically that you have to be pretty disciplined actually about the work that it really takes to call a feature done mm-hmm. when you are actually running a team like that, right? Because one of the things that I think the separation kind of helps you with dev and test is basically that effectively you are actually creating a budget, and you're basically creating some leeway basically for you to kind of like not run into that by saying, hey, I'm going to split my team and maybe my composition is going to be 60% dev, 40% test team. And that's going to ensure you basically that you have 40% of your team really focusing on measuring that and really focusing on that. And so it helps you to kind of like avoid the traps of basically not spending enough time measuring the different dimensions that you have in your product. But I think that if you are actually like fairly disciplined, both models can work, right? And and sometimes also like there are challenges in both models, right? Because whenever you actually like split any job that has to get done into two pieces, the inevitable things kind of like start to happen. It's fairly easy for dev and test to start kind of like working in silos, and then collaboration actually could degrade very easily. So in a team where you have dev and test, you have to actually like watch and be very proactive actually for that not to happen. And to
but it forces sure also, it effectively forces more communication and more clarity.
Well, you are required to do it,
yes,
right? But the problem is, again, like it's one of those traps where if you don't do it, then you're gonna actually end up with a very dysfunctional team that is probably twice as expensive as one that only has developers.
Right? Cool,
you have to be very proactive actually to ensure that that machine is working.
Yeah, which goes to show that software development is as much a skill in getting people together and organized together than as much as you know the technology piece. Thank you, Cesar. That was very insightful, and I hope folks found that insightful as well.
Yeah.
Thank you for tuning in.